Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The DC Jazz Festival has announced that their 2022 festival dates are August 31st through September 4th, marking a permanent shift of its annual DC Jazz Fest to the end of summer over Labor Day weekend. For more information, dcjazzfest.org. Bandcamp Fridays return tomorrow, February 4th. On the first Friday of each month since March of 2020, the Internet Music Company has waived its revenue shares to help support the artists who have seen their livelihoods disrupted by the pandemic. Bandcamp Fridays, already scheduled after tomorrow, are March 4th, April 1st, and May 6th. For more information, isitbandcampfriday.com. The New England Conservatory in Boston, Massachusetts, has announced its spring 2022 season with over 100 free events, including concerts, masterclasses, panels, and workshops. They include centennial events for jazz legends, composer and multi-instrumentalist Jackie Byard, and composer, bassist, and bandleader Charles Mingus. Residencies and masterclasses conducted by flutist, saxophonist, and composer Anna Weber, and bassist and composer Dave Holland, and performances by pianist Jason Moran, the Saxophone Ensemble, and the Jazz Composers Workshop Orchestra. For more information, necmusic.edu. Pianist Pete Malaverney performs at Ornithology Jazz Club in Brooklyn, New York, tonight, February 3rd at 8 p.m., and at Django Jazz Club in New York City on February 8th. He'll be joined on both dates by bassist Ugana Okegwa and drummer Aaron Sieber. For more information, ornithologyjazzclub.com and thedjangonyc.com, respectively. Saxophonist Steve Slagle performs at Smalls in New York City tomorrow, Friday, February 4th, and Saturday, February 5th. His new release, Ballads Into the Heart of It, becomes available on February 18th. For more information, steveslagelmusic.com. Saxophonist Dave Wilson and his quartet perform selections from their new release, Stretchin' Supreme, at On D Musique Live in Baltimore, Maryland, on Saturday, February 5th. The performance will be live-streamed as well as open to a live audience. For more information, ondmusiquelive.com. On Tuesday, February 8th, pianist Michael Weiss performs at the Scat Jazz Lounge in Fort Worth, Texas, coinciding with his new release, Persistence, on Cellar Live Records. For more information, michaelweiss.info. The 2022 Hudson Jazz Festival is scheduled February 10th through the 13th and February 17th through the 20th inside of Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House in Hudson, New York. Entitled Lift Every Voice, the 8-day festival conveys a message of hope and revival and celebrates the artistry of Black jazz musicians and their innovation of the genre. Performers include The Baylor Project, vocalist Alexis Morast, and the Jimmy Green Quartet. For more information, hudsonhall.org. newenglandconservatory.org. And now for new releases. Out tomorrow, Friday, February 4th, pianist Micah Graves' self-released Pawns. Other releases already out? The first single from saxophonist Brian Landris's forthcoming release, Red List, music dedicated to the preservation of our endangered species on Palmetto. The single is titled Canopy of Trees. Two reissues by the late keyboardist Jose Roberto Bertami, Os Tatuis and Jose Roberto Trio on Far Out Recordings. Vocalist Irene Gelenti's Dawn on Antidote Sounds. And tenor saxophonists John Wojciechowski, Jeff Bradfield, and Scott Burns' Tenor Time on Afar Music. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger.
I think Julian's got the best situation. I think he's in California right now.
Yeah, I'm in a car right now driving from Palo Alto to San Francisco.
Oh,
nice.
Nice. Breeze in your hair.
Oh, oh yeah, it's pretty sweet.
My guests are violinist and educator Sarah Caswell and pianist, composer, arranger, and bandleader Julian Shore. Both collaborate and perform with guitarist Dave Stryker on his new release, As We Are, on Strike Zone Records.
Great.
Great.
Cool, cool, cool. All right, so let the games begin. Here we go. So thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for having us.
When the two of you got the call from Dave about his dream project, were you two already involved in other projects? Let's hear from Sarah.
Yeah, no, as a freelancer, freelance musician here in New York, you're involved with a lot of different projects. And a lot of what I've been doing over the last 15 years I've been in New York has been, collaborating with other artists like Dave and working on their projects and helping them follow them through.
Yeah. And Julian.
Yeah, I've been a working musician in New York for many years, for about a decade, and been playing with a bunch of different people over the years, and yeah, definitely had my hands in a bunch of different things.
Julian, you had come to this project as a fan. You knew who you were getting involved with through listening to and working with Dave, bassist John Patitucci, and drummer Brian Blade. Were you given carte blanche to arrange, or did you sit down with Dave and Sarah on what to do for everyone?
Dave had pretty specific ideas for certain songs. They're all his originals for the most part, but after a couple of songs, he started to give me a little more leeway and let me kind of drive the bus with the arranging. And then it ended up being a really great kind of back and forth. And I might push the boundaries a little bit and Dave might rein it back in and vice versa. And it was, it was great.
Cool. So Sarah, let me put you on the spot. Did you like what Julian did for the quartet?
Man, you're really putting me on the spot. No, I mean, Julian is such an incredible musician, pianist, composer, arranger. So when Dave told me that Julian was going to be doing the arrangements for this project, I was thrilled because I've been a fan of Julian's for a long time, and having a chance to actually be able to work with him and collaborate with him on this was great. And to actually read through those arrangements for the first time and to get a sense of what both Julian and Dave were envisioning with this, it was super exciting. So I was smiling from start to finish.
What was it that you appreciated about the arrangements?
Well, a lot of times what can happen for a string player when they're put into sort of a string quartet context in a jazz setting is that the arranger might not know the musicians he or she is working with. And so oftentimes the string players will end up getting footballs, as we call them, where they're like, you know, their whole notes, they're very easy parts and maybe not, they're not intricately written, where you really feel as though the quartet is a very active or is playing a very active role in the way that the arrangement is developing. So the fact that Julian knows me and Dave knows me as well, and they were familiar with the other string players in the group, they could trust us to give us more challenging things to do with these arrangements, and could really sort of write based on our strengths, and really make us an integral part of the ensemble and the arrangements.
Got it. Did Dave ask for these specific string players, or were one of you or both of you asked to select them by reputation or through your working relationship with them?
Well,
go ahead, Julian.
Feel bad. Yeah, it's just, well, Dave, you know, was very sure that Sarah was going to be leading the string quartet, and definitely wanted her involved, and that was really exciting for me because I really love everything that Sarah's done, and then he trusted her to make sure that she got the right people for the ensemble.
Yeah, and the musicians that I brought on board for that, they're great string players. They've got very different backgrounds. Some are more classically based. Some are more have a lot of experience as jazz musicians as well. So, but the wonderful thing is that they're all very stylistically experienced. So that whatever Julian and Dave would put in front of them, I knew they could handle it and do a beautiful job, really interpreting the arrangements and, you know, just bringing them to life.
Sarah, like you, I was taught violin through the Suzuki method, which focuses very much on the individual player. Now, as an accomplished soloist, ensemble player, and educator, when do you feel is the right age and or playing level to immerse young string players in ensemble playing?
Oh, right from the get-go. You know, I think the idea of making music a social experience is something that is so vital in being a musician. The idea of collaborating with people, exchanging ideas, having musical conversations, even if you're just beginning to play, even just like, you know, exchanging noises, you know, like making funny noises on your instrument, but just having that kind of, creating that kind of dialogue early is something that I think can be so influential in how those children will develop as people and as musicians. And the sooner they can learn how to communicate and collaborate and, you know, learn about themselves in the process is something that I think definitely benefits them from a very, very early age. Mm-hmm.
And Julian, you co-wrote Overture with Dave, and you wrote One Thing at a Time. What's the story behind those compositions?
Well, the Overture was done kind of last minute. It's kind of funny. Dave had mentioned it a few times. And I always thought he was joking that he wanted an Overture, because he would laugh when he said it. And then at the end of the recording session, he said, all right, so what about the Overture? And I said, "I, you were serious?" And then I went home and didn't sleep for, you know, a couple of days and wrote that little Overture there. I got to try to conduct it a little bit, which I really don't know how to do. So it was fun to actually work with the strings in that way.
You did great, Julian. it's awesome.
And then One Thing at a Time is one of the main influences that Dave had mentioned with the record was Wayne Shorter, and that he really was interested in Wayne's music and his harmony and some of his concepts. So he had asked me to write a tune for the project. And that is a contrafact on the Wayne tune called Dance Cadaverous. So I kind of, at the time, I was feeling very overwhelmed by everything that was kind of going on with the pandemic. And then also I was in school, and also I was writing for this company, and I was feeling pretty overwhelmed when Dave gave me this great opportunity. So my kind of mantra was take it one thing at a time. So that's where that tune came from.
All right, you two, as we come to the end of this interview, if there's a question I didn't ask you, if there's something you'd like to express about this release, you are welcome to. Why don't we start with Julian?
I would just say that, you know, Dave's been playing a really long time and he's done so many great things as an artist, you know, with Stanley Turrentine and Brother Jack McDuff and so many legends. But it really takes a lot of courage to step into something that's really different than most of your output for so many years. And I just thought it was so cool that he really wanted to open things up and try something completely new. And then, of course, you know, it shows his musicianship. He just sounded incredible in that situation too, you know. But I just really love people who are open-minded at all stages in their careers.
And Sarah.
Yeah, very similar to what Julian was saying. I've known Dave for a long time and have known him to be a player in a certain in certain contexts. But I think this project is definitely a very different one for him, and one that he's wanted to do for a long time. And to see him and Julian both follow through on that vision and just to create such a beautiful album, and to see how excited Dave was in the studio to do this. He was smiling the entire way through and just, you know, super excited about the music that was coming out of the studio. So I'm really happy for him. I'm really happy for Julian, and I'm grateful to the both of them for having brought me on board to be part of this project.
For more information, julianshore.com and sarahcaswell.com. And now for some music.
Thank you.
took selections from two 2018 releases. From his Blue Note release, Vanished Gardens, saxophonist Charles Lloyd heard playing flute on Blues for Langston and LaRue, Bill Frisell on guitar, Greg Leitz on pedal steel guitar, Ruben Rogers on bass, and Eric Harlan on drums. And from Vibus Joe Locke's origin release, Subtle Disguise, we listen to Make Me Feel Like It's Raining. Jim Riddle on piano, Lauren Cohen on bass, and Sam Val Sarkisian on drums. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview is with guitarist, composer, and educator Dave Stryker. His new release on his Strike Zone Records is titled As We Are. He's joined by pianist Julian Shore, bassist John Patitucci, drummer Brian Blades, and a string quartet, violinists Sarah Caswell and Monica K. Davis, violist Benny von Gottseit, and cellist Marika Hughes. Thank you so much for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Great to be here, Cheryl. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You call As We Are your dream project. What stars needed to align for it to happen?
That's a good question. During these times, with a lot of gigs and festivals and everything getting canceled and in flux, I was lucky when the pandemic started in that I had a record in the can ready to go, which was the WDR called Blue Soul with Bob Mintzer. That was a record that I was ready to go. And I was like, at that time I was like, wow, should I even put this out? Things are so weird right now. Maybe I should just wait. And then I thought, people want to, they're all sitting at home. We might as well put some music out there. So I did that, and then time kept going, and I had another record in the can, which was called Baker's Circle with Walter Smith and my organ trio. And a year later, I said, okay, guess I'll put this one out, And then end of 2020 into 2021, I started thinking, what is something I always wanted to do? We had time to think about a lot of things. And something I always had wanted to do was something with strings. And so I started thinking about it, and I had a former student named Julian Shore, who I knew when he was 14 years old. He was in my combo at a Litchfield jazz camp. And I had heard, he went from being, 14-year-old kid to he got a lot better. And then he started teaching at the camp, and we became friends. And so 20 years later, I had heard him, I had, kept up with what he was doing, and I had heard a couple of his records, and there was some strings on it. And I asked him, I said, this would be good. I need a collaborator on this to do this string project. So I called him up, and he said, yeah, let's do it. And so that's how the stars kind of aligned on that. And we spent from the end of 2020, we started maybe in October talking about it. And I just started writing some music, and I would send him, as I wrote a tune, I would send it to him, and I'd say, do whatever you want to this, you know. I want you to put your own stamp on it. And I also, you know, he had said that we couldn't really afford to do an orchestra, but he thought that a string quartet would be, you know, we would get what we wanted with that. And he was right. So we just started collaborating, and we spent the whole year working on that. And then come in June, we went in the studio. And I guess I should also mention that once I started hearing how great this was going to sound, I decided to go and get the best guys I could possibly get that are on the planet.
And you did.
Yeah, John Patitucci and Brian Blade, who had been playing with Wayne for 20 years, and also Chick Corea. And I knew John enough to call him and ask him, and he was into it. And, you know, it was kind of a good timing because nobody was really working that much. And Brian lives in Lafayette, Louisiana, and I flew him up here, and we did it. And you've got the record in your hand.
Sweet, sweet. You know, as a music student in high school and then college, I began to recognize composers and arrangers like Billy May, Nelson Riddle, and Quincy Jones with vocalist Frank Sinatra, and Jones with pop icon Michael Jackson.
Right.
Whose string arrangement work did you first fall for?
I liked all the stuff you mentioned, but more recently I had, let's go back a little bit. I guess there was a record that Keith Jarrett did in the 70s called Expectations, and it was a double album on Columbia Records. I think it was its only record on Columbia. But he had some beautiful string writing on that that's really got me. And but I had also, you know, all those records, CTI records with that's Don Sobeski arranged for Wes Montgomery and George Benson. I had heard all those and loved those too. But and then, you know, moving a little closer, there was Shirley Horn's Here's to Life, which arranged by Johnny Mandel, was one of my favorite records. And another record, Charlie Hayden, Art of the Song, that was also had Shirley Horn doing The Folks Who Live on the Hill. And of course, those were orchestras. So I was, you know, thinking big, but all those things were inspiring, as well as some of the Brazilian music that I love, that's maybe just cello sometimes, you know, that just adds so much to the music.
Yeah. Now, the release has 9 compositions on it, 6 are your own, 1 you co-wrote with Julian. When you started composing, did you compose from the guitar, or did you start on another instrument?
I use the guitar. You can see I got them right here. I sat right here, and I listen to music sometimes when I have a project, and I can, when I have something that I have to do, that's when I can get the most inspired to write. If I don't have like a gig or a record date coming up, sometimes, you know, the spark is not there. But knowing that I talked to Julian and we were making this thing go forward, I started writing some things. I had a couple that were kind of already started. One of them was the ballad on the record that's called As We Were. And that was the first one that Julian tackled. And he wrote that string quartet intro, like a minute long intro to that song. And when I heard that, I just knew this was going to be amazing, because I got chills hearing some of these arrangements that he came up with. He demoed everything out. He's with his synthesizer and his computers and stuff, so mm-hmm. You could hear what everything was going to sound like. So I don't know if I answered your question good. Did I?
You answered it good.
I basically sat here and I would get inspired by different things. And, you know, there's a Brazilian tune on there that had, like I mentioned, I had listened to Elis Regina, and I love Tonino Horta, and I love Milton Nascimento. So those kind of things I would listen to. Yeah, there was other things like Pat Metheny, of course. I love Pat for so many years. And I Kurt Rosenwinkel, some of the modern guys, Laje Lund. These guys all, I liked some of the things they were doing. So maybe I was inspired a little bit by that. But it kind of just got my juices flowing. And I would write out little demos and make little simple demos with here in my studio. And then I'd send it over, you know, tape it on my phone and send it over to Julian and set right out a chart and give it to him. And he would take it from there. And he came up with some great stuff.
With vocalist Kevin Mahogany, was that the first time you were composing and arranging for someone else?
Before that, I had done some arranging for Stanley Turrentine.
Okay.
My first big gig was with Jack McDuff, and I played with him for 2 years, and he actually had some, you know, his book was pretty well arranged. You know, he had some really cool arrangements. That's what one of the things that kind of set him apart from I think some of the other organ groups was that he had really tight bands with cool arrangements. Joe Dukes was playing drums, but he had arrangements with the sax and the guitar playing the melodies. Then I got with Stanley, and he also had, you know, his hits that he would do. But as time went on, there was a record that we did called Tea Time, and I arranged Yvonne Lynn's tune for him called The Island. And so, yeah, I'd done some things, but when I got with Kevin, I certainly started doing a lot more. When Kevin called me up after I'd left Stanley, asked me to join him, and he had a record deal with Warner Brothers at the time. So we needed to put a record together. So that's how we came up with that record that had Nature Boy and all those arrangements and stuff on it. Mm.
So you had the opportunity to play with some of your favorite players. Would you talk to us about this dream session? How was it when you sat there with John and with Brian and the string players and with Julian? Describe that experience, that feeling you had of producing your dream project.
Julian and I, once we had the arrangements ready to go, and like I said, we recorded in June. So we had basically from October to June to be working on this. And we had gone in to his studio in Brooklyn and done some playthroughs with other musicians, because John and Brian doesn't live here, and John is very busy. So, and to hear what the music was sounding like. And then we had one where we actually brought in a string quartet and Sarah was there. Caswell, who kind of led the string quartet, as well as Benny, the viola player. And then, you know, I had to fly Brian in here for the record date. And so we just basically rehearsed once the night before the date up at John's. And we also went one other time up to John's before Brian got here. But with the actual quartet, we rehearsed the night before. And yeah, it was, I don't know how to, it was, I'm like, these guys are some of my favorite musicians. They're actually playing my music. They're beautiful people and nice people. And it was a dream. And I'm so grateful that this all came together and that they played on it and played so beautifully. And we went in the studio the next day, and I wanted to record the quartet first. There was a few reasons. The studio was too small to do, have the string quartet at the same day as we were there. And I wanted to get, like on all my other records, the energy and the interaction and the chance taking that we all love about jazz. I wanted that to happen and then be able to take the strings. A week later, we took 2 days with the string quartet. They came in and Julian directed them, and they played, you know, over the parts, you know, and it was an amazing feeling to be there. It's funny because in the studio they filmed everything. They had just cameras set up that, you know, small cameras you wouldn't see. And on later, I had my son edit them together to make some videos. And that was the first time I was so in my own zone when I was recording that I didn't hardly get to see Brian, what he looks like when he plays. And I don't know if you've ever seen him play, but it's a joy to watch. He's
relaxed.
And he's so cool.
He's
and happy, and you know, it's great to see. And of course, Patitucci, you know, total virtuoso. So, you know, being kind of in my own zone, and just, I wasn't like looking as much as I would usually in a studio to make eye contact, but, you know, cause I had to kind of, I had to stay focused. And, but when I watched the videos, I was like, oh man, this is so cool. So great to see Brian, you know, he's just got such joy in his playing. It's amazing.
So as we come to the end of this interview, Dave, I want to give you the last word.
Sure.
And is there a question I didn't ask? Is there something you'd like to let us know? Like hint, hint, upcoming gigs?
Well, you know, even though these are crazy times, managing to still have some gigs on the books. I'm going to be up not too far from you in Saratoga at Cafe Lena with Chuck Lamb's group on Tuesday, February 8th. And then this Friday coming up, if anybody's in Indianapolis, I'll be playing at the Jazz Kitchen. And I'll be on the 25th of February in Irvington, New Jersey at the Cricket Club. I have some nice gigs coming up. They can always go to davestriker.com and look up my itinerary. But the main gig that, a couple of good ones is Smalls. I'll be playing this music on March 26th in the city. And the big one is July 5 through 9. I will be at Birdland with the entire band.
Ooh.
For a whole week.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So, with John Patitucci, Brian Blade, Julian Shore, Sarah Caswell, the whole group, and the string quartet. Yeah, so, you know, doing that, I also have a pretty full load teaching. I teach at Rutgers. I teach at Indiana University. I fly out there every other week. And I also teach at Montclair State right here in Jersey, and I'm there on Friday. So between gigging and teaching, I keep pretty busy. Yeah.
For more information, DaveStriker.com. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host The Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. Feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you. We'll be right back.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.